Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hi, and welcome once again, Thwip Thwip. I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And you are listening to The Quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he watches 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, we review Spider-Man Homecoming. Is it a good movie with a bad title? A bad movie with a bad title? Or a good movie? No, it does not have a good title at all. I can't even say it. We will be doing this, of course, with some spoilers. So hopefully this posts long enough where any listeners have seen the movie already. But just know that going in, we will dive into some spoilers when we hit our review section. You can join this conversation by following us on Twitter at 10kmovies, T-E-N-K movies, or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com, where he writes still some about the movies he is watching, as well as where you download this podcast. So, Brian, Spider-Man Homecoming, a movie that kind of snuck up on me. Has it done the same to you or not?
Yes. As far as Marvel movies go, Guardians I was aware of, excited about. Spider-Man I knew was coming, but I think of the two, I think I'm probably more excited for Ragnarok than I am for this movie. Even though 2 or 3 years ago, this would have been off the chains excitement. I just, part of it's the marketing, part of it's the timing, part of it's having the Andrew Garfield movies kind of shoehorned in between. I think if they had gone, if those movies didn't exist and this was the second big screen adaptation of Spider-Man in our lifetime, I think I'd be much more excited.
Yeah, I think that the peak level excitement was right when Civil War came out. If a movie had been in 6 months, I think the hype would feel a whole lot bigger to me.
That's true. That's true. The timing of that, they maybe should have, I don't know if they could have done it, but they could have gotten Spider-Man out.
I doubt they could have made that happen. But as we've, I think, talked about before, we saw the trailers, and it kind of felt like you've seen the movie. And then other things looked a little bit more intriguing. You mentioned Thor Ragnarok. Wonder Woman, I think, still is the movie of the summer at this point so far, although Baby Driver is getting a lot of buzz.
I'm excited about that. I have not seen it, but excited about Baby Driver.
So
I hate the title for that, too, though. But
so it's hard to have a sense for me right now. You know, is it going to be able to kind of take over the narrative of the summer? Now, we may very well be in minority as far as that goes, and I know it'll be a box office hit, and really, again, it's a Marvel movie. We've talked about this before. It's going to be pretty good, but I'm also, again, that guy that liked Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man 2, and liked Amazing Spider-Man 1 and Amazing Spider-Man 2.
So. I'm the guy that didn't hate Spider-Man 3.
There was a Spider-Man 3? I don't remember that.
I never hate it. Now, I agree it's not good.
It never happened.
Well, let's just say this.
La, 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 la.
No, this is a legit point. It is not, and I think you can agree on that, it is not Superman 4 bad.
There was a Superman 4?
Quest for Peace?
It never happened. Okay, let's move in then to some particulars about Spider-Man Homecoming. Our reviews are going to be heavy with spoilers, likely, but I've also, I guess maybe because I haven't been that just dying to know what happens, I've stayed spoiler-free on it on this end before seeing the movie. Have you researched or done anything at all?
I haven't read full reviews, but I've seen some snippets of reviews, and somebody talked about the cast and the cool cameos that were in there as his high school teachers. So I was curious, because he said it was like loaded with the best comedic talent available. So, well, who is that? And I had forgotten that, because I had known when the press released that Hannibal Buress was in the film. And so I'd forgotten that. And then Martin Starr is also in the film, who I like. The other names, maybe they are the comedic talents of tomorrow, but I've never heard of them.
So it sounds like you've remain pretty spoiler free, other than just sort of seeing, reminding yourself who's in the cast and who's not. You know, folks that you're familiar with in the cast, Tom Holland, obviously, along with Robert Downey Jr., the two big stars of the movie. What other things have you seen Tom Holland in? What other things have you seen maybe some of the other young cast?
I have not really seen Tom Holland in much because I don't think he's been in much. I do know he was the young boy in The Impossible, the Naomi Watts movie. But if you had asked me to name the kid in that movie like 2 weeks ago, I would not have known it was Tom Holland. I just know it because I looked up Tom Holland to see what he was in, and he was that kid. So I can't say that he, I mean, he was good, but I can't say I thought of him as being like a star or anything. But everything seems to be, he seems to, A, be nailing the role, and B, be really handling the pressure of being, you know, basically a 20-year-old kid who's given one of the world's most iconic roles, and he's handling it fairly well.
What are what about some of the other cast? You know, what are things you've seen them in? I want to hold off on one of the most obvious people, I think, for us to talk about and kind of focus on some of the maybe lesser known
names. Well, Zendaya, who I had no idea who she is, and still not convinced that's a real name. I mean, that sounds like the character name in the movie, not her name outside of the character. And I, you know, and everything I've read about his like best friend from the movie is really good. I like Marissa Tomei; I think she's fantastic. I like the fact that Aunt May's younger because the writers and the people in charge of the movie sort of made a good point. They said, "Look, so she's supposed to have this 15-year-old kid as her nephew. It doesn't make any sense that she's an 81-year-old woman. Like that makes you know that sort of makes no sense that she would be that much older than him. She would be 40s to 50s, probably somewhere in that, maybe 60 at the latest, which is about where Marissa Tomei is. So I like that. And I like that she's sort of a contemporary of Iron Man. They're pretty much the same age.
You mentioned the filmmakers, writers, directors. What are some things that you know them from? And how does that kind of set your kind of thoughts going into the movie? What kind of movie
I know John Francis Daly, one of the writers. And he was in Freaks and Geeks, and he was also, I didn't see him in Bones, but he was in Bones. But I love him in Freaks and Geeks, and my friend Jamie and I, we both love that program. We talk about how we both agree that John Francis Daly has probably the best smile of any person we've ever seen.
So he's one of the writers, so that kind of indicates what? The dialogue is going to be kind of crisp and snappy like it was in Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it's going to feel a little like a superhero Judd Apatow.
Kind of. He also wrote Horrible Bosses, but now he also wrote The Incredible Burt Wonderstone. Not so much a plus for him in that regard.
But, so perhaps a mixed bag and still a question mark. What are we
He's a likable person and he makes me want to like the movie. Now, the director, the only thing I know from the director is the movie, and he has not done much. He has done Cop Car. That was a movie with Kevin Bacon where he's a dirty cop who his car is stolen by this kid. And that it's convoluted to describe it. It was good, but this is in keeping with a relatively new but dominant trend of picking young, cheap directors to churn these movies out and hoping, you know, and giving them kind of control. Part of that is because it's easier to control young directors. I mean, they don't come in with demands. They don't come in telling the producer, especially in these tentpole franchises, which are more or less guided by the producers, not by the directors.
So let's mention then to Michael Keaton, the Vulture.
Oh, yeah.
Is this who you are most excited for in this
movie? Okay. You know, every now and then I'm reminded, there seems to always be, like every 2 or 3 years or some actor from that was like dominant in my childhood that pops back up somehow and has sort of a mini renaissance or whatever. And I'm reminded of how awesome they were when I was a kid. And in some ways I rediscovered what they've been doing in the 10, 15 years since I knew who they were. And Michael Keaton is obviously one of those characters. I love late career Michael Keaton. I think he's been fantastic. Birdman was a great movie to me, in part because Michael Keaton was Birdman. If you had cast anyone else in that role without that baggage of having been the Batman, and in some ways still is the definitive Batman for me, it would have been not as good a movie. And then, you know, he went on to be in Spotlight, in The Founder, which was very good. So he's been, you know, sort of, he was dormant for a period there, but then he made a comeback with, I think, Jackie Brown and Quentin Tarantino in the mid to late 90s, kind of plateaued, but now he's as in demand as ever. And I love the fact that he's tackling a superhero movie now, 20 years later. On the other side,
and as a villain, and I think, you know,
inspired
what I've seen in the trailer actually kind of reminds me a little bit of some of the cadence and acting from The Founder. So it'll be interesting to see.
He was a bad guy in that movie, too. I mean, he was pretty clearly the villain of that piece.
Right. It'll be interesting. It seems to be a character that's maybe a lot more grounded and as realistic as you can get with a superhero movie.
Well, the one review I read part of said that he was one of the best superhero villains in 15 years.
And you saying that will transition into this maybe last little bit before we cut off the recording and go watch the movie. I want us each to share one hope we have, one fear we have, and one question we have going into this movie. And my one hope really is that is true. Again, superhero movies, the villains have been on the whole rather weak. And so my hope is that someone like Keaton can make the Vulture a compelling, strong character that is not going to just be simply forgotten the minute you walk out.
I agree with you. Because you're right, that the Marvel movies so far, outside of Loki, I mean, there's not a single one of them where you're like, I hope that guy comes back for another round. And I hope you're right. My hope for the movie is a little bit bigger than that. My hope is that this leads to a long-term partnership with Sony and Marvel so that we get, you know, not just the five Spider-Man movies we've been promised, but maybe we get, you know, Fantastic Four and others that they can more expand. I think the universe needs to expand in order to continue going into whatever phase they're calling, you know, that after the Avengers Infinity Wars Part 2 or whatever it's going to be called.
Okay, so what's your fear?
Well, beyond the fact that I fear that it won't be all that. My other biggest fear is that it's too much of an Iron Man movie.
That's the fear that I share with you. Maybe related to that is I really fear that what sort of has sunk other Spider-Man movies, including those that never happened, were maybe a few too many subplots. And there seem to be a lot of characters in this movie that
a lot of characters
could, you know, lay some beats for future stories. And it's one thing to do that in a comic book. I think that's a lot harder to pull off in a two-hour movie and to have a really tight narrative. And so my fear is that, not that it'll be convoluted, but that there won't be a payoff for those beats. My question for the film is, what are they going to do to distinguish this Spider-Man from the previous Spider-Mans? What is going to be Tom Holland, his acting, his charisma, his choices? How is that going to distinguish him from Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, who, again, I thought were pretty good Spider-Mans?
My question is, like, how much of a separate entity is Spider-Man going to be? You know, because the first movie he comes in, he's already joining and fighting the Avengers. So it feels like, you know, how's he going to be his own? You know what I'm saying? How's he going to stand? And even in his first solo movie, he's got Iron Man with him. So I want to see them establish him as being a character that doesn't need these other superheroes, that he can carry a two-hour movie on his own. And I know he can, but I just want to see how they're doing that. And also, like, are they going to go the same route that the first two series went to, which is heavy on the love triangle? Or are they going to downplay that? Or, you know, or romantic entanglement. I mean, the first two movies, the second movie wasn't necessarily a triangle, but how are they going to do a love interest for Peter? I'm curious about that.
So those are the things we're going to the movie with. So let's stop talking and let's get watching. And we'll be back in just a little bit to give you our review of Spider-Man Homecoming. That's still just such a bad title. Let you know if our hopes, fears, and questions were answered and or confirmed.
Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes the Spider-Man.
And we are now back from seeing Spider-Man Homecoming. Still a bad title, a little bit of a shoehorn title, but a
better,
really
better title, man.
I feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah, marginally better.
But not a lot. What a enjoyable time in the movie theater. Ultimate Spider-Man, the comic book, kind of come to life is my main takeaway. How do you feel about it, Brian?
I think it was as good as it could have been. I like Tom Holland. I say already, one movie of his own, and he has supplanted Andrew Garfield.
He was really good.
Is he better than Toby? Maybe not. Although I love the subtle reference, like when he was upside down, like kiss him. Oh, fantastic!
We'll get into the things we really loved about the movie, and any maybe bones we have to pick. There won't be very many of those. Again, there are spoilers coming here as we move into talking about it. But let's start where we ended our last segment, with hopes, fears, and questions. So I think we both would agree our fears, we had really nothing much to fear at all.
You know, I was concerned that Tony would be too big a part and it would be like Iron Man 3.5, and he was really a supporting character. It's really, when I think back on it now, the biggest thing I'm realizing is how many characters they managed to shoot to get into a 2-hour movie and make them all feel real characters. I mean, so now, having seen that, I have less concerns about Infinity Wars now.
Yeah, it was very seamless.
I mean,
Robert Downey Jr. was definitely the biggest character on screen when he was on screen. But I think it was just the right amount.
This is the most. He's been in 3 Iron Man movies, but this is the most on-screen time Happy Hogan has had. Period.
That was great, and the cameo by Gwyneth Paltrow near the end as Pepper Potts was really good.
I also felt like the one thing that distinguished this movie from both of the previous incarnations is that Peter was not alone. I mean, that, you know, he was such a, in both the other movies, he was such a loner. And not only that, neither one of those movies really had a solid, like, comic relief character. They couldn't go anywhere because Peter wasn't, he was so brooding. And so part of that is because the movies both dealt with his parents' death, and this movie sort of glossed over that. And that let them take him to being more of a smart aleck and letting that part sort of, which the comic books has always sort of emphasized, but it let that sort of breathe more than the other 2 movies.
Yeah, my big fear had been there'd be way too many subplots. Everything was woven together, I think, really well, and some nice possibilities dropped for future installments, maybe, of this Spider-Man. I don't think there was a subplot that overwhelmed stuff.
No.
I think it built really well. And you really touched on what my question had been, how would they differentiate? And to me, the biggest difference between this and the other Spider-Man movies was that this movie was genuinely funny, mm-hmm. and organically so, and the others, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but there was more kind of, I don't know, melodrama, there was more heaviness to it because you saw the origin, the death of Uncle Ben. What they differentiated here, the theme was still the Spider-Man theme. With great power comes great responsibility.
They never said it, though.
They never said it. That, I think, though, was the theme of the movie. They just handled it in a much different way without having to do the origin story. And to me, that was the most impressive part.
And also, the one thing that I think, in retrospect now, no Harry was a masterstroke. Not even mentioning Osborn, no Harry. Get Green Goblin, push him to the background. We all know it's coming. But to do it that way made it so much better. And inevitably, how would you feel about this? Because I'm just thinking, just spitballing this out here, okay? Inevitably, you know, the Osborns will probably be, if not in the sequel, in the 3rd movie, because, you know, as he goes to college. At that time, he'll be old enough to do it. Norman Osborn, James Franco.
Well, I think that's a conversation for another time. Because I want to focus on what my hope had been, too, for this movie and the villain for this movie.
Michael Keaton was fantastic.
Biased already, I know. He was really good. And he made such a compelling character. Lots of different layers. I think the best kept secret, or I don't even know what, the best reveal possibly in a Marvel movie, that he was, you know, the love interest Liz's father. I kind of got a sense of, you know, why aren't they saying who his wife is, and they've sort of mentioned his family, and sometimes I just look at movies like that and start thinking about, well, maybe. But even when it happened, it was like, oh, gosh. And even coming up, it was like, oh, something bad's about to happen.
They handled that so well.
But it was so well done. So well. You mentioned as we were walking right out of the theater, you said, in the hands of a lesser actor, when Keaton's character, Adrian Toomes, figures out that Peter's Spider-Man, that could have been really corny and cheesy.
Oh, my gosh. But that,
he nailed
it. Just that one shot of his eyes when he realizes, and it's just like so... It was so good, and you could see it. He was one of the best parts of the movie.
And to me, the hope was that he would have a complexity and a depth of character that really haven't seen in villains other than Loki and in Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin in the Daredevil series. To me, the biggest added depth that we saw was actually in the post-credits scene when another guy comes up to him and says, you know Spider-Man. There's a rumor. You know who it is. And he won't reveal who Peter is for whatever reason. That to me just adds another interesting piece of who this character is, who he is as a villain. I just really, really enjoyed that. That was a perfect piece of casting, acting, the character.
Fulfilled. Especially since that little scene got tagged on, would you wonder if that was the plan originally, or if his performance was so good they tagged that on? Because in essence, that scene promises to me that Vulture will make a return appearance in a future Spider-Man movie. Otherwise, why have that scene? Why show him in prison if you don't intend to bring him back? And I wonder if that was the plan all along, or his performance was just so good and they realized, hey, we need this guy back. I could even see somehow him redeeming the character in the next movie, either doing something to save Peter, or else kind of like happened in Amazing Spider-Man, you know, dies to let the daughter live or something. I could see him making some sort of sacrifice and being a redemptive character, but that's such a good villain. And I liked how Spider-Man was coy. They were playing coy with us about whether or not Spider-Man is going to join the Avengers or whether he's going to stay off on his own. I like that he's sort of blurring that line and not really making a decision now. I like that.
Yeah, so again, I think your hope had been that, would this be successful enough to expand the universe, do some other things? I think the answer to that is obviously yes in our eyes. And it really was just a good movie. Now, a few little bones to pick. I mentioned, I think the movie is very funny, very authentically, organically so, especially the scene with Donald Glover. I thought that was just really well done.
Yeah, that's great.
Several others. For some folks, though, you know, they may not like their Spider-Man kind of that overly funny. So your mileage may vary.
Well, they haven't read Spider-Man.
Your mileage may vary on that some. The other, from a technical standpoint, I'd probably pick a bone. Some of the CGI in the early half or third of the movie was a little bit obvious, a little bit more rubbery.
Yeah. I'll say this, too, though, one of the things Marvel has been criticized for in the past, or especially in the past three or four years, has been the diversity of their films. This was clearly the most diverse, and intentionally so. I mean, I think they intentionally did that, but it's the most diverse film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I would agree with that.
Hands down.
I would agree with that.
And my breakout character to me was Ned. Breakout character, my favorite character in the movie, as far as what I just didn't see it coming. He was a star for me.
I thought he was good. Zendaya's Michelle,
very
MJ,
good, very
she's
good.
She's the Mary Bill, Jane character. That was another great.
Well, her name is not Mary Jane, but and they may just be doing an homage to Mary Jane. I mean, not
right.
necessarily be making her into the character. you know, at some point, one of the things that is sort of kind of cliche for Spider-Man movies is he never quite gets to the point where he does let his personal life win. You know, he always leaves. I would like to see, like, at least one time where it goes against type, and, like, somehow he comes back and he's there at the end of prom, or he's there at the end of, you know, where he's not always letting somebody down.
I do like, too, one of the other things they did early on with Ned, and then at the very end with Aunt May, they kind of took that suspension of disbelief you always have to have with a superhero movie. How can the people closest to him not realize, or closest to the superhero, and not realize that she is this, you know, hero? And they sort of just took that off the table with the two people closest in Peter's life.
Yeah, the Ned reveal was so early in the movie, and such a, and really helped the movie. Like I said, part of that was because, like the other Spider-Man movies, he's so lonely because he can't share this burden with anybody. And to have somebody else and somebody else's eyes to help him, fantastic. I'm wondering if the Karen computer character, I don't know if that's a big part of the comic books or not.
No.
But not. I wonder how, if that's going to be I assume it is. That was also a very helpful sort of way of getting inside his head without being inside his head.
Yeah, just a lot of neat little innovative things, I think, in the script and the narrative that really helped this movie. You know, I can't think of you know, much, again, to really, you know, nitpick about that sort of thing. I can't think of a whole lot of clunky dialogue. The music, I thought, was really superb in it. Now, saying all of that, I will say, and maybe it's just nostalgia speaking, I still think if you take the Spider-Man movies that have been made now, I say there's only been five. Some people say there's been six. But I will say that
you're counting this as the sixth.
This is the fifth, okay, is what I'm saying. Some people would say it's the sixth. Regardless of that, I still think Amazing Spider-Man 2 is a better movie. It has a little bit more emotional weight to it, but this movie is just a notch below, in my opinion. So much fun.
The first Spider-Man 2 or Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire.
Okay.
Just the emotional weight of that, the significance of that, it kind of was what a superhero film could be. It was kind of the epitome of superhero films at the time. So I still think that, to me, is a better movie. But this one, honestly, is so much different. It's a little hard to compare the two. But this one, I don't know that I've had more fun watching a Spider-Man movie.
What's so funny is that I kept thinking, when watching it, I kept thinking, this is what a PG-13 Deadpool would be like. It felt like Deadpool just going short of those moments, and it felt like they almost copied and stole in a lot of ways. Not quite as meta, but they stole the tone of that Deadpool movie and put it in high school, and then let them run with it. And that's what it felt like to me. It felt like Marvel, the MCU's answer to the Deadpool movie.
We both obviously two thumbs way up for this. Go out and see it multiple times. I think I can already tell I'm probably going to go see this at least one more time in the theaters.
Yeah.
Really, really enjoyable movie. And I think that's all we have to say. Yeah. So tell us what you think of Spider-Man. Still a bad title. Homecoming on Twitter at 10K Movies, or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Until next time, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11
with Swiftness.